This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Remember that point in time not too long ago when we were just waiting for baseball to get here? Yeah, the college baseball season is here and it is going fast. Hello again, I'm Dustin McComas from OrangeBloods.com, and you're listening to the latest installment of the Extra Bases podcast on TheYak.com, episode 28. And, you know, I feel like I spent so much time on previous podcasts, like, when is baseball going to get here, and off-season discussions and scrimmage discussions and press conference discussions and Major League Baseball free agency discussions. And all of a sudden it's here and it goes by so fast. Texas has already played eight games, and it's set to play five more this week, beginning Tuesday at home when they have back-to-back midweek games at home with Sam Houston State and then UTSA. And then comes the monstrous out-of-conference weekend series at Dish Falk Field with LSU. I got to think that this is one of the biggest non-conference series for Texas at home in a long, long time. I mean, LSU is way up the list in the rankings. So it's a huge week for the Longhorns, and it really begins. Don't overlook that game Tuesday. Sam Houston State swept Louisiana this weekend. And as anybody that follows college baseball knows, I mean, going back to when David Pierce was there, it's always consistently been kind of a fringe top 25 team. So that'll be a tough one Tuesday, and Texas definitely can't overlook these midweek games before they get to the LSU series this weekend. So this podcast will probably spend a lot of time looking back at the previous week of action. You know, Texas opened its 2019 season on the road with a road series win at Louisiana. They followed that up by hammering Rice in Houston at Reckling Park, 11-4. So they returned to Austin with a very successful start to the season on a four-game road trip. They went 3-1. They get back to Austin. They have a four-game set against Purdue, a team that made the NCAA tournament last season. Lost a lot from that NCAA tournament team, and you can kind of see it. They were strong at some points. I actually like their bullpen arms more than their starting arms. I actually thought that their last two starting pitchers were better than their first two. I was kind of weird. They might want to look at adjusting that starting rotation. The top of the lineup was pretty solid, but it really dipped in the bottom part. That's a team that D1Baseball.com predicted to finish seventh in the Big Ten, but kind of lists them in an area where they could potentially make some noise. I think that's fair. I don't think they're an NCAA tournament team, but they are a Division I club that's, you know, not a pushover. So the Longhorns took 3 out of 4 at home from Purdue. I think it was a good weekend. It wasn't a great weekend, but it was a good weekend. Anytime you can win a four-game series at home in a series that you need to win, that's important. You don't want to split those series. It just doesn't help the RPI. It doesn't look as good come NCAA tournament seeding time when you've got a home series against, you know, one of the few teams that Texas will play that's not going to be an NCAA tournament type team, at least I don't think. So Texas really needs to handle its business at home, and that's what it did in different ways too. I mean, it was kind of, you know, they want to win baseball games in different ways, and good teams have to win baseball games in different ways, and that's what Texas did. You know, I'll run through these games real quick. I'm not going to spend a ton of time on each of them. If you're not an OrangeBloods.com subscriber, what are you doing? I'll say that as nicely as I can. Really, what are you doing? We had reports from all of the games over the weekend. I spent a lot of time at Dish Falk Field, which, you know, really look forward to Taco Deli Sundays in the press box. Man, that'll get you out of bed a little bit quicker when you know you've got to cover a home baseball game on Sunday, but you get Taco Deli in the mix as well. So I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on each of these games. As I said, you can go to OrangeBloods.com and see a very thorough, detailed breakdown of each game. Texas Friday took care of business 7-2 against Purdue. Bryce Elder again was really good. I didn't think he was quite as dominant as he was against Louisiana, but really, what I really liked most about him, in addition to throwing six innings and only giving up one earned run, he had six hits, walked three, struck out six. Every time he lost feel for the baseball or get out of rhythm or walked a guy or something like that. Every time it looked like, okay, the wheels might fall off this inning, he quickly made an adjustment every single time. And he's often made quality pitches with guys on base pretty consistently this season, although he didn't really ever pitch with that many guys on base against Louisiana. But he did it against Purdue. And I think that's a very positive sign for him, for Texas, because, again, this is a guy that doesn't have a lot of starting experience. It was a surprise to a lot of people that he was the Friday night guy. Mostly a bullpen in a kind of a long reliever last year, although he could give you some short relief. He was a spot starter at Oklahoma when Nolan Kingham was scratched for I believe what was an academic issue. So the fact that we're seeing him figure out when things get off track on the mound and quickly adjusting, I think is very, very positive. And he's shown through two starts that he understands his stuff. He understands when his curveball is better than his changeup. He understands when the changeup feels there and then he needs to use it against lefties. He understands, you know, when he doesn't get on top of his fastball, how to correct that and how to get up back on top of that with that angle and that sink. He understands, you know, when the way the cutter comes out of his hands, if he needs to adjust that. And I thought it was really impressive that just you could see him batter to batter, pitch to pitch, making adjustments on the mound. And that's the type of thing that you have to do as a starting pitcher, especially if you're going to pitch to guys three times through the lineup. You know, for the major league stuff, there's a lot of statistical data. Third time through the order, batters have more success against pitchers. And it's not just that guys are maybe tiring or stuff changes or whatever. It's they've seen this guy two times before. The third time, they're probably going to have better swings on the guy that they've seen him twice. And I'm sure that holds true in college as well, though there's not really any data to support that. But the third time through the order against Purdue, started mixing in the changeup more. It was another very, very competitive strike-throwing type of performance. 97 pitches, which I was a little surprised they let him throw that many pitches, considering how many he threw in his first start. I know it's a very low effort delivery, but again, this is a guy that doesn't really have much starting experience. So he threw well. Cole Quintanilla was sharp out of the bullpen. Bro Ridgeway got touched up some of the ninth inning, but by that point, it didn't really matter. I'll talk more about Quintanilla as this podcast goes on, because I thought one of the more interesting developments over the weekend was the way their bullpen threw. Offensively, Texas took its walks, man. I thought I posted this on orangeblitz.com as was happening, but you know, Purdue starter Dalton Parker, I watched him throw to a batter and I was just like, he's not gonna be able to repeat that arm action or that delivery. It was too tough. So control is gonna be an issue for him. Texas worked 10 walks in that game. 10 walks. That is a ton of walks. Dalton Parker walked 6 in 3 2/3. And really, Texas, the game was kind of weird because Texas let Purdue off the hook a little bit early on. Just couldn't quite manage that huge knock after Ryan Reynolds put them on the board in the first inning with a two-out, two RBI single through the hole on the left side. Purdue actually got a run back. And then Texas, as it's done really all season besides one game this weekend against Purdue, responded. Michael McCannon responds in the fifth inning. Zach Zubia and Texas manufactured a run the sixth inning. And then Texas really opened the game up in the seventh when Austin Todd hit a triple to right center to score 2 runs. So Texas handled its business in that first Friday game. I continue to think that I'm all in on Bryce Elder as a starter. I don't know how many dominant outings he's going to have, but he throws strikes, he really competes, he makes adjustments, and he's got 4 pitches to use, 4 quality pitches. And when he's got them all working, he can be really tough. So LSU will be a big test for him. But I think regardless of what happens against LSU this weekend, I think Texas fans should feel very encouraged about his future moving forward. And that he, to me, is the no doubt Friday night guy. You get to Saturday's game, a different kind of game. Purdue jumped all over Blair Hindley in the first inning, which, I mean, we've seen this before. Purdue put up 3 runs in the first inning. The Texas defense was really shaky behind him. And then, as I said, Texas has responded really well, and Purdue took a 3-0 lead in the first inning. In the second inning, Texas exploded for 7 runs. Michael McCann with a double that scored, you know, cleared the bases, 3 RBI double. And then, you know, the ball was really carrying out the right field. Bryce Regan hit a 2-run homer, his first homer at Texas. Eric Kennedy then followed a little later with a homer, his second homer at Texas, a 2-run shot. all of a sudden Texas was up 73 and really had total control of that game. Well, I say total control. Purdue actually cut that game to 7-6, and then Texas again, as it's done, responded. I mean, immediately when Purdue cut that lead to 7-6, Texas the next time up pushed across three runs in that inning. Sam Bertelsen had his first career hit at Texas. He lined an absolute laser off the right field wall on the fly. I think it was 106 miles per hour off the bat to score two runs. And then Lance Ford, really competitive at bat, he had a sacrifice fly in the fifth inning. So Texas immediately regained that lead. Or didn't lose that lead, but pushed it back to four runs at 10-6. And, you know, I mentioned there, well, I didn't mention this, but I don't think we've done a podcast since this happened. Purdue had a picture on their official athletics website, I guess, previewing the Texas series, and it's just like four guys, kind of, I don't know, generic dudes, I guess, posing for a photo. A couple of dudes that have like a thumbs up going on. And then you see this dude on the – it's on the right of your screen. I'm sure you, if you go on Twitter or go on Orange Bloods and search the photo, you can. I'm sure you can find it. And there's this guy on the right side. He's kind of – he's doing the horns down, but you can tell he's – there's not a lot of confidence in that horns down. It's like, I want to do this, but should I do this? Like, why am I doing this type of thing? Which, again, why in the hell is a Big Ten team having a guy do the horns down? Like, Northwestern did it last year, and the dude almost didn't survive the weekend after he got thrown at twice and all this other stuff. So, yeah, you just picture, and it's just like, oh, there it is. And if that ever happens on the internet, there are certain people that are going to find that. And they're going to find it every single time. So, of course, it kind of blew up a little bit on social media. It created some discussion on Twitter. Purdue actually apologized for it. And I guess either the SID took the heat or somebody blamed the SID on Twitter. I don't know. But they basically said, oh, yeah, we're sorry, whatever. Well, Texas, I mean – and I know a lot of people are like, oh, Texas shouldn't need any extra motivation, or why is it such a big deal? But I tell you this from having covered Texas for a long, long time. What season is this for me? I started writing about Texas baseball in 2006 season, kind of in a beat capacity. But I honestly didn't even really know what a beat writer was back then. I self-taught myself pretty much everything. Maybe that'd be an interesting podcast to do, just kind of my journey to where I am now. I didn't really know like what a beat writer was or whatever, but I just started writing about Texas baseball on like a game-by-game daily basis. And then, oh, you know, that's what a beat writer does. So 2006 was my first season. And I can't tell you how many times I've seen either the horns down or you know, running out to the Longhorn and doing something, or just some sort of like disrespect to the Texas logo or the program. You know, Andrew Chafin's throat slash when Kent State came to Texas in a regional after they beat Texas in a game, then Texas ended up winning the regional, came back and you know, got a win over Kent State and then won the regional. I can't tell you how many times I've seen that those sorts of things happen. And Texas like responds every single time. Like it's clockwork. It really is. So for the people that are like, oh, they shouldn't, you know, they shouldn't care about that. It shouldn't be a big deal. Try telling those guys that, because they get fired up about that stuff. They really get fired up about that stuff, and it always adds some sort of extra motivation to where, you know, they just want to go out and stomp the opposition. I mean, remember the regional in Houston in 2014 when A&M beat Texas. You know, Texas beat A&M the first game of that regional, and then the two teams played again, and A&M forced a winner-take-all game in the 2014 Houston regional, and the guy came off the mound doing the horns down or whatever. I knew then at that point Texas was not going to lose that game the next day. It just wasn't going to happen. Like, it just so many times some opponents disrespected Texas in some way, often with the horns down gesture. And Texas always responds. It never works out well for either the individual or the other team. So Bryce Regan hits a two-run homer, his first homer at Texas. He's fired up. You know, and he's coming around the bases. Texas at that point, he just put them up 5-3. He comes around, and there's video on, I think, either the Texas account or the Longhorn Network account. And Bryce Regan actually tweeted out the photo today, which I thought was pretty funny. He comes around third, and he shoots the Cody Clemens glare into the Purdue dugout. Now, he hasn't mastered the Cody Clemens glare, because when Cody Clemens did it, it was like, yeah, I'm a bad motherfucker. I just took you guys deep again. Like that kind of face. And Regans was kind of like, yeah, you know, eat shit. I just took you deep. So he's coming around third, and he stares in there, and he's fired up, and he throws, you know, his horns up to the dugout. And I'm thinking, oh, man, like, A, I love the balls on a freshman infielder to do that sort of thing. That's awesome. I'm sure that that earned him so much love in the clubhouse for that. B, it gets back to that point. Like, these guys, when those things happen, they know. They know it's in the clubhouse. They're either told or it's printed out and posted or whatever. They know. They know. And they take the field every single time wanting to just smash the opposing team. So Regan comes around his first homer at Texas and does that. I thought it was a pretty awesome moment for him. I thought it said a lot about kind of the character of this Texas team and how competitive they are. I mean, David Pierce specifically mentioned before the year how much passion this group has for wearing a Texas uniform, for being at the University of Texas. And I think it's, you know, it's no more telling than a guy that's from Amherst, New Hampshire, that played high school baseball his final season at IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. And he's arguably the guy the most fired up about it and pissed off about it. I mean, that kind of says a lot about that character of that program and how much passion they have for wearing a Texas uniform. So he did that. Then Kennedy hits a homer, and they take total control of that game. Ended up winning that game 13-6. Austin Todd actually hit an opposite field homer. Again, the ball was really carrying out the right field that first game. And he hit an opposite field homer in the sixth inning to put Texas up 12-6. Speaking of Henley, it was just another Henley start. You know, gave up six runs, four earned on seven hits, walked one, struck out four, hit three guys. Like, that's just kind of the Blair Henley outing right now. We'll see what happens with the weekend rotation. I think that he was just good enough to where Pierce won't make a move there right now. But, man, LSU is going to be a monstrous test for all of those pitchers, and especially Henley, because he's not going to be able to get away with the stuff he got away with against Purdue and pitch into the seventh inning in that game. So behind him, Mason Bryant, another solid outing. Two strikeouts, one walk, and 1.1 shutout. Donnie Diaz threw a shutout inning in the ninth inning. His velocity, definitely not back. He was actually 86-90. I sat down there for his inning. But, man, I mean, this was my first really up close look at him. Man, does he have a presence about him on the mound. I mean, he really has a calm, competitive demeanor about him. He looks like a guy that really understands how to pitch and how to execute. I mean, he spun over a couple quality breaking balls for strikes. I think he showed a slider as well, and I believe a changeup. So once that velocity comes back, he's going to be a real weapon in the back end. But even before then, he just knows how to pitch, and I think he's going to be able to give them something in the back end. Again, we'll talk more about the bullpen as we get through these games. So Texas wins that first Saturday game, 13-6. Then came the dud, and this is the first dud Texas has had this season. I wouldn't even classify the Sunday game at Louisiana as a dud, because Texas came all the way back and had a chance to tie that game in the ninth inning with the bases loaded. Texas lost 4-0 against Purdue in that second Saturday game. They actually almost got no hit. Their one hit was an infield single, and it was a legitimate infield single by Mason Hibbler. We were actually kind of joking with new SID Kevin Rodriguez in the press box after the game, like, you know, what if that was a close play, and, like, you know, new SID gives Texas a hit to prevent Purdue no hitter, but, you know, it was clearly an infield single, was scored correctly. So Texas just kind of went through the motions that game, and David Pierce really changed the lineup some. He had Bertelsen at first base after his strong game. He actually had Hibbler at shortstop. He took Regan out of the lineup. Kasten Peter had to catch because they just needed to give Michael McCann some time off. And really, this DJ Petrinski stuff, the more I see him throw, the more I see McCann catch every inning, the more I think that this could linger on for the entire season. So that's definitely going to be something to follow. And Michael McCann, if he gets hurt, oh, man, Texas is in the world of trouble. Not because Kasten Peter didn't perform well. I actually thought, given the circumstances, I thought he held his own out there. But, man, does Texas need Michael McCann to stay healthy. So some different lineup type things. And Texas just didn't show up in that second game. And that kind of, as Pierce said afterwards, that's kind of human nature with doubleheaders. Is it's hard to sweep those because you've got one team that really does not want to get swept, and you get another team that's really feeling good about itself. It's already won two games and won a game earlier in that day, and they're kind of thinking that, you know that they're just going to be able to coast to a win, and they often don't match the intensity of that opposing team. So I think that that's what happened in that second game on Saturday. The bright side for Texas was Coy Cobb through 7 shutout innings, 4 hits, 2 strikeouts, hit a batter, didn't walk anybody. Much better outing for him than the Louisiana outing when he couldn't throw strikes. He's really competitive. His fastball velocity was only 87 to 92. I had seen him up to 95 in the fall. I don't know if he's just trying to pace himself a little bit more or whatever. But really the most important thing about his fastball is that it didn't find the middle of the plate very often. It was either arm side, it was glove side. It had some sink to it. It had some angle to it often. When he missed, they were quality misses. They weren't misses in the middle of the plate. And it really prevented Purdue from barreling him all game. Because, again, his changeup, since I've seen him in the spring, I mean, I watched the Louisiana game on stream, and I watched obviously watched the Texas game against Purdue in person. His changeup hasn't been as good as it was in the fall. His breaking ball really hasn't been usable. So I'm not trying to be, you know, Debbie Downer here and you know, soak a blanket and throw it on the start. But there is some element of a mirage to it. And, you know, again, I'm not trying to say he didn't throw well. Clearly, I mean, the results were impressive. And you can beat teams competing at a high level, throwing strikes and executing your fastball, especially when it has the life that Cobb's does. But it just the secondary stuff just hasn't quite been there. And I'm not going to try to get too scouting nerdy on you right now, but I'm going to try to paint you a picture with Coy Cobb. So his changeup is, when it's right, like it was in the fall, it is really good. I mean, it's a plus pitch when it's right, and it profiles in the future as maybe even a plus-plus pitch. I mean, that's how good his changeup was. And I think kind of what's happened, at least early on, is, you know, sometimes when you throw a changeup, the way it comes out of your hands, especially when you're throwing a circle changeup, is the way you finish it, you kind of want to, when you finish, pronate a certain way to where you're kind of, the ball comes out of your hand and you're turning. I'm trying to think how this would look from a right-hander perspective. You can't see me. Video podcast would come in handy right now if I could show you what I'm doing. You can't see me, but I'm thinking, okay, so you're turning your thumb towards first base counterclockwise with your hand. Like, that's the way your hand's turning as you finish that changeup. And if you've ever seen a guy throw a screwball, that's the way you throw a screwball, is you basically almost turn your hand like the wrong way as you're finishing. So sometimes when guys throw a circle changeup, because that pitch is coming off of those three fingers on your right hand, instead of, you know, the main two fingers, your pointer finger and your middle finger, it's coming off of those three fingers, you kind of want to turn your wrist over in a way that spins the ball, that gets that kind of screwball circle changeup motion. And what I think is happening with Cobb is he's been so much of a changeup guy, and he's been trying to generate so much of that movement with the changeup because it's not playing the way it normally does for him, that he's pronating too much, and it's affecting his breaking ball. And it's also affecting his changeup, because if you finish like that, it's almost impossible to throw a breaking ball. Because if you're throwing a curveball, you know, you're throwing it differently. You know, you're kind of snapping it down a different way and turning your wrist a different way. If you're throwing a slider, you're throwing it differently. You're kind of almost throwing it like a fastball, and at the very end, you're kind of getting that slider snap of the pitch. And the changeup is just totally opposite. So that's kind of what I'm seeing with him right now. I'm sure that Texas is seeing that as well. But really, I mean, he competes well. His fastball's got life. He has not shown anywhere close, I think, to the stuff that he showed at times in the fall. And I think the upside is still really, really high. I just think it's a minor mechanical thing in terms of the way he finishes. And this might be a great opportunity for Texas in his next bullpen. I know this is something they did with Nick Kennedy during his sophomore season that really unlocked him, is they made him throw changeups an entire scrimmage or entire bullpen to get him to throw it like a fastball. You know, maybe for an entire bullpen, they get him just to throw sliders or just to throw fastballs or, you know, throw changeups a certain way and look at it. So, you know, but that was a step in the right direction for him in terms of the result. I mean, to go out there and compete that well and throw that many strikes, 10 groundouts compared to 7 flyouts, 104 pitches. Feisty guy on the mound, man. Didn't want to come out of the game. So I think that was an encouraging thing for Texas. But the most important thing that happened in the weekend, again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBlitz.com. Episode 28, we're going back through the Purdue series, just kind of the main takeaways, some points about individual players and things like that. The most important thing that happened for Texas this weekend was that Sunday game. They came out very early on, Matt Whalen on the mound. He got the start. Kudos to him, man. Fun kid to talk to after the game, making his first weekend start in a big moment. He said he didn't have trouble sleeping because he was studying for two exams on Monday. Really, really bright kid, man. He's one of those ones that baseball doesn't work out. You don't have to worry about him figuring out something to do professionally. But a very competitive guy. I mean, he's a skinny dude. So you kind of look at him out there. Who's this scrawny guy out there on the mound? High effort delivery, herky jerky. But man, does he compete. He competes his ass off. And he pitches like he's 6'10" and throws 100 miles an hour. I mean, that's the kind of way he carries himself out there. So they got a sharp first inning from him. He struck out two guys with fastballs. Texas comes out immediately in the first inning, starts pounding the ball over the yard, and takes an early 3-0 lead. They didn't know it then, but that was enough. Austin Todd had a kind of a soft line drive single into left field, and then DJ Petrinski ripped a 2-RBI double into the right center gap, and Texas took a 3-0 lead in the first inning, and that's really all she wrote. I know Texas only had, what did they have in that game, 5 hits, 1 walk, 6 strikeouts. They swung the bat so much better than those numbers indicate. Poor Zach Zubia, man. He was at, by the time the weekend ended, and I know it started poorly for him, he struck out twice with the bases loaded early on, once in that Friday game and then once in that Saturday game, or maybe it was once in the first Saturday game and once in the second Saturday game. I think that's how it went. But by the time the weekend ended, he was murdering the ball. He hit one 110 miles an hour off the bat, another one 108 miles an hour off the bat, and he finished the weekend with 7 barrels. So he probably hit the ball over 100 miles an hour 7 times and literally had nothing to show for it. I mean, he got robbed of a couple extra base hits. He hit a mammoth moonshot out to dead center field. The ball just wasn't carrying enough, and it didn't get out of the yard. I mean, he had a play in the first game. He hit that ball to the wall and was robbed. Like, poor Zubia, man. He had a frustrating weekend. He's hammering the ball with nothing to show for it. But he was a good example of Texas just having so much better at bats than the results show. And I'll get to the bullpen discussion now, because Whalen goes 5 innings. He pitches to 1 batter in the 6th inning. They bring in Cam Fields. As he got loose, oh man, you saw the electric Cam Fields. The slider was up to 86 miles an hour. He ended up striking out 3 guys in 3 shutout innings, only walked 1. That 3rd inning, he was awesome. I mean, that was a dominant Cam Fields that Texas thinks it's going to see consistently. Then Cole Quintanilla again with a really sharp outing. He struck out 3 guys, only gave up 1 hit in a scoreless 9th inning. So this bullpen for Texas is kind of taking shape. And this is something David Pierce talked about after the game. They don't view things as having a closer. They view a stopper. And I think Fields was a great example of that. Normally that may be a guy you want to hold for the 9th inning. They don't view it that way. If it's an important situation in the game, the guy's fresh, they're going to try to bring him in. And that's what they did with Fields, which I thought was very smart. But they view Fields right now, at least right now, Fields, Quintanilla, Bryant, as their big-time go-to stopper-type guys of the power stuff. And then they view Donnie Diaz in that discussion as well from the standpoint of he can come in at any point late in the game and get us outs. So you're starting to see this kind of this bullpen take shape. And Brandon Ivey being a specialist guy, he was used. Like, he's not missing bats. I think that they kind of just need to retire that thing, to be completely honest. I know I said on a previous podcast, hey, here's your lefty specialist. I forced that. I mean, he's been barreled a few times right at people. Purdue got the best of him in a situation where Pierce should have went with the power strikeout guy as opposed to an 87-mile-an-hour lefty that without a breaking ball. So the bullpen is starting to take shape from this standpoint of the Fields, Quintanilla, Diaz, and Bryant thing, because those guys, every time out, have missed bats, generated strikeouts, and really thrown well. I don't think any of those guys have given up an earned run this season. Let's see. Cole Quintanilla, 7 1/3, no earned runs. Mason Bryant, 2 1/3, no earned runs. Donnie Diaz, 3 innings, no earned runs. Cameron Fields, 4 2/3, no earned runs. So, and even, you know, Nico O'Donnell had his moments at Louisiana, 3 innings, no earned runs. So the bullpen is starting to take shape. I think the crossroads type situation for Pierce will be if things don't work out in the Saturday rotation spot or maybe the Sunday rotation spot. The best candidate to fill that role, I think, is Quintanilla. I saw him in the fall throw four innings and it was a breeze. So I think he has that type of longevity in him. But I know it's going to be really tempting right now to just lock those guys into the bullpen and say, you know what? I think we can get enough from the guys that we're going to start games that they can get it somehow to the fifth and sixth inning and we can just rotate these guys in and out with whoever's fresh and generate results. Because Quintanilla has been awesome, man. I know he's up to 97 miles an hour at Rice. He was up to 94, I believe, on Friday against Purdue. I saw him basically 89 to 92 with Sig. His last strikeout of the game actually had some cut on it on accident. Power breaking ball that's getting a lot of ugly swings and misses. I mentioned Fields. I mentioned Diaz. Bryant, I saw his cutter up to 94 miles an hour over the weekend. Control can kind of be an issue at times for him, but he's a, you know, he can tell as a former football player and he carries himself that way on the mound. So this bullpen is quietly taking shape in a very, very positive way. And I know LSU is one of the better offenses in the country, so the Texas pitching staff is really going to be tested. And heck, it's going to be tested by Sam Houston State on Tuesday. That's a quality club that had a couple of comeback wins at Louisiana. But I'm starting to think that Texas feels really good about this core group that they have in the bullpen. The real question will be what happens if the starting rotation stuff just doesn't quite figure itself out. I think they have to feel great about what's happening on Friday. Sunday, they probably feel pretty good. But as I mentioned, I think there's some things that need to be tweaked with Cobb to really get him back to the guy that has the stuff to really consistently miss bats. And I still think Saturday's a total question mark right now. I don't know how they can feel very, very confident about what's happening on Saturday. And, you know, LSU will tell us, like I said, LSU is going to tell us a lot because LSU's lineup is, it might be the best lineup, maybe Texas Tech, it might be the best lineup that Texas sees all season long, because that group is really, really good. And they've been scoring a ton of runs as well. As for position players, I mean, we'll wrap this up here pretty quickly. I'll run through some quick thoughts about the position players to finish this episode of the Extra Bases Podcast on theact.com. Ryan Reynolds had a pretty damn good weekend, especially defensively, man. He made a few awesome highlight plays. Those two catches in foul territory near the wall, the charging play on the drag bunt Sunday in a do-or-die situation. He's playing with a ton of confidence right now. He said he's lost 25 pounds. I had to hold myself back from laughing when he started listing off some of the things you're doing. Yeah, you know, junk food, no more double stuff Oreos. It's, you know, it's clear that my man likes some, like, the double stuff Oreos, but he's cut them out among other things. He's lost 25 pounds. He's playing with a lot of confidence, really carrying himself well right now. Austin Todd continues to look good. Duke Ellis kind of had a frustrating weekend offensively for him. He's still getting on base, but it was just a timing thing. He was just a tad off. I wouldn't worry about him. Eric Kennedy was an adventure in left field defensively at times, but he continues to look like a future star offensively. Bryce Regan, on every upcoming scouting report for the rest of the season, if a right-handed pitcher has a sweeping breaking ball, they're going to say, throw it to Bryce Regan. And until he adjusts, he's going to see a lot of those. But his talent is really showing, both offensively and defensively. He had some very youthful moments, both offensively and defensively again. But he had some really impressive moments showing some range to both sides at the shortstop position. The ball really jumps off his bat, man. I mentioned the opposite field home run, his first homer of the year. But he had a couple other loud balls off the bat this weekend. So his talent showing. Mason Hibler, kind of shaky on defense. Looks like he's getting closer to snap out of it on offense, but not quite. They got to figure out a way to get him going. First base to me is still all DJ Petrinski. Maybe they look to possibly platoon Sam Bertelsen there at times since he finally, you know, got that first career hit on the Texas uniform. We'll see there. I think they need to keep Petrinski's bat in the lineup somehow. Michael McCann, tip your hat to that guy. Tough dude. He had to prove it in the worst way a man can on Sunday when a ball bounced and caught him in an area where it changes the pitch of your voice. I don't know if he said anything to anybody immediately after that, but it probably sounded like this. So he had to prove his toughness, but he's been impactful on offense. He's holding his own on defense. They'd be in a world of trouble if they didn't have Michael McCann right now. You know, Lance Ford, I think, is continuing to kind of nudge his way into the lineup more often. We'll see what happens there. But they're getting a lot of guys at bats. I mean, I'm trying to think back of all the – let's see how many guys have gotten at bats already. So Todd, McCann, Reynolds, Petrinski, Regan, Ellis, Kennedy, Zubia, Hibbler, Ford, Bertelsen, Fields, Shaw, Guy, and you know, Kasten Peter, the backup catcher that caught. So that's a lot of dudes that already have at bats. And they're clearly still in the information gathering phase to see how this all works positionally. But I think that they have to feel pretty good about a lot of the answers they have right now, especially with the way Reynolds is playing, Todd is playing. You know what you're going to get from Ellis. You know what you're going to get at the plate from Kennedy. Regan is more than held his own so far. They have to be pleased with that. I mean, they got to play McCann. They know Petrinski is just basically a hitter only right now in first base. So there's not really too many question marks lingering. I know they have some areas they want to look at, but I think for the most part, you know, the information gathering part will probably end pretty soon. And who knows, some of those guys might get a look in the midweek, but they need to, I mean, with any midweek game, you need to win those games. So with that, we will wrap up the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com. I hope I've gotten you up to speed on everything Texas baseball. Again, man, they're playing a lot of games. They have four games over the weekend after a Tuesday game at Rice. They've got two midweek games. Then they play three games against LSU, and holy moly, oh, man, this is the time of the year my wife is not too big of a fan of because she doesn't really see me much. And they got another midweek game after LSU at home against UTRGV, and then they're on the road for a four-game set at Stanford. And then March 15th, man, Big 12 baseball is here, and it opens with a bang as Texas Tech comes to town. So, yeah, man, I will try to pump out the podcast as fast as Texas plays baseball games. So, you know, we'll get you all of the Texas baseball coverage and college baseball coverage and also pro baseball coverage once that gets going. I am delighted to see spring training baseball on my computer screen and on my television. That just warms my heart like a plate full of 15 Pluckers wings. Oh, man, do I love seeing spring training baseball on my television right now. So until next time, have a great week. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com. Get to theact.com. Take advantage of all our great podcast content. Next time I talk to you will probably be, I don't know, maybe before the LSU game. We'll squeeze another podcast after Texas' two midweek games. Maybe there's some talking points we'll get into before LSU. But I will definitely talk to you soon. So in the meantime, have a great week. Take care. Enjoy that baseball is back. And thank you for listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theact.com.